This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is out sick. It's a scandal that caused an outcry in the literary world. An article in the London Daily Mail accusing Ian McEwan, the British heavyweight author, of lifting words and phrases for his much-praised novel Atonement from the late romance novelist Lucilla Andrews. McEwan's novel includes a section about nursing in a London hospital during World War II. Critics say it borrows phrases and feelings from Andrews' memoir about the war. McEwan does mention Miss Andrews in the acknowledgments to the book and has spoken about the influence her book had on him. The journalist who wrote the article, Julia Langdon, says she avoided using the word plagiarism but did say the parallels between the two books are striking. The response from the literary world has been extraordinary. A remarkable list that includes Martin Amis, Margaret Atwood, Zadie Smith, and even the usually silent Thomas Pynchon has joined a campaign to defend McEwan, saying that if he has committed any sin, so have they all. This hour, we'll discuss the perils of plagiarism. When does borrowing jargon become borrowing ideas? Later in the hour, we'll talk about children orphaned by technology. But first, I am joined by Thomas Mallon. He's an historical novelist and the author of the forthcoming book Fellow Travelers, as well as the author of Stolen Words, Forays into the Origins and Ravages of Plagiarism. And he joins us from our New York bureau. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
We want to hear from you as well. When does literary inspiration become a debt that can't be paid merely through acknowledgments? Is this McEwan imbroglio merely a misguided case of gotcha? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is talk@npr.org. Mr. Mallon, the book Atonement, it's the story of an act committed by a young girl, which then reverberates for the rest of her life, affects her and a couple of other characters in a really striking way. And one small section of the book deals with a time when she's a nurse in London. And some of the details in that section are the details that are under question here. But why has it gotten so blown up into such a scandal when we're talking about a very small part of this book, really?
Well, I think part of it has to do with the fact that Atonement was so widely praised. It was really probably the best novel of the year it came out several years ago. And I think so to a certain extent, people may have been taken, you know, by surprise. But I think that to a great extent, this has been overblown. And I say that as somebody who developed a fairly draconian reputation on the subject of plagiarism with the book I published on that topic a number of years ago. I mean, here in the States, the discussion of this incident has immediately brought into play all of these past plagiarism scandals involving, say, historians, the Doris Kearns Goodwin case, Stephen Ambrose, whatever. I think one of the things that needs to be done with the McEwan matter is to take all of that stuff off the table and look at the very particular set of circumstances involved. This is a novel that is borrowing from a nonfiction work, and borrowing is legitimate in terms of facts, source material, specifics. You couldn't have historical novels. You couldn't have a lot of contemporary set novels without that kind of source material. The question to be dealt with is always, to what extent has language itself been replicated?
Right. And that's where the use of the source material, the use of reading this memoir and getting some facts about what it was like to be a nurse during World War II, all that seems certainly legitimate. But some of the writing, if you see it placed next to each other, Ian McEwan did seem to borrow some of her phrases, which I find incredibly surprising given that he's such a wonderful writer. Why would he actually borrow some of her words or phrases?
Right. If you do what people always do in cases of purported plagiarism is, you know, you run the parallel columns. And if you do that in this case, there are, I would say, several instances where he has a couple of feet down the slippery slope and the phrasing is replicated more closely than it should have been. I think that it could have used sort of one more round of the novelist's alchemy, you know, the alchemy a novelist will typically use.
Now, I know you can't step into his shoes, but how do you explain how that happens, that even a writer such as Ian McEwan, such a well-respected writer, might do that?
Well, I really don't think that there's any question of intentionality here. I just can't imagine that in this case. I think it's really a species of sloppiness, and I think that novelists who are not scholars and who don't, you know, do all of the careful things that scholars do with footnotes and bibliographies, they make mistakes, and they get years wrong, particularly historical novelists. They have anachronisms. They have mistakes like that. I would tend to regard what's at issue with McEwen as a species of that, that there's a kind of carelessness at work. One of the things that I don't hope we get into, or I hope doesn't arise out of a situation like this, is that we start to see historical novels coming to us festooned with long bibliographies and lots of footnotes. I think that would be a terrible trend. It's been remarked upon recently that a lot of novels are carrying more in the way of bibliography. I think that this has to, as I said before, be separated from scholarship. And I think what's at issue here is mostly sloppiness, not bad intentions.
We are talking about plagiarism, or the perils of possible plagiarism. My guest is Thomas Mallon, author of Stolen Words. If you would like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. And the journalist who raised the initial similarities in these two books is Julia Langdon, and she is joining us now by phone from London. Thanks for being with us, Ms. Langdon.
Hello. Good evening.
Now, I know you avoided using the word plagiarism in your initial reporting on this. What did you call it? What would you call it?
I called it copying. I mean, he copied phrases. He used her precise words. He developed episodes from two paragraphs into four pages. And he actually made his character, Bryony in Atonement, became the character of Lucilla Andrews. Now, I thought it was rude. You know, I'm a well-brought-up British girl, and I thought it was rude. I happen to know Lucilla Andrews. Her daughter was a friend of mine, and it was brought to my attention by an Oxford academic who's my goddaughter. I had no agenda. I admire Atonement. I think it's a very fine book. But I think that Ian McEwan should have told Lucilla Andrews that he'd done this. And your other guest said it was a very slight aspect of the book. Actually, it's 30,000 words of Atonement.
You're saying that 30,000 words have been based on her writing?
No, I'm saying the section of Atonement, section 3 of Atonement, which is about Bryony being a nurse in St. Thomas's, is 30,000 words long, and that is not a small section of the book.
No, understandably, that's not a small section of the book, but the section we're talking about, which I think, from what I understand from your article, is a section that talks about the details of nursing. Those are the sections that are most under question, where he came closest to actually using her words.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm one of the very few people, Ian McEwan's another, who've read both books.
Okay.
None of these authors who came out of their burrows last week have read both books. And I'm here to tell you that there's an extraordinary similarity in the two books, and it's striking. And I just think it was rude of McEwan not to have contacted Lucilla Andrews, who knew nothing about it until my goddaughter told her about it last year.
And we should mention, for people who have not been following this story closely, that Lucilla Andrews had been planning on saying something about this publicly, but she died before she could. And that's part of what comes into this story, I think. And Julia, you have received a great deal of criticism about this. What is your take on the reaction from the literary world? Some amazing writers.
Extraordinarily elitist and snobbish in some ways. I mean, Lucilla Andrews wrote 35 novels in her lifetime. She wrote in order to educate her daughter, who went to Cambridge, and she was a single mother because her husband had died when shortly after their marriage, and the daughter had been born. She had a very, very difficult life, and my take on it is that the literary establishment, which had never heard of Lucilla Andrews, has rallied to defend Ian McEwan against a charge which I have not made. I have not accused him of plagiarism. I understand plagiarism to be direct copying. He does actually use her exact words in a number of instances. But it's not plagiarism, it's copying.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Julia. Julia Langdon is the London-based journalist who wrote the original article in the Daily Mail, and she joined us by phone from London. And with me still is Thomas Mallon, author of Stolen Words, Forays into the Origins and Ravages of Plagiarism. I think something that we want to start talking about a little bit now, Mr. Mallon, is the whole question of how writers are influenced by other writers, and what is that line that gets crossed when it is no longer a question of influenced, or that they've gone to another writer for research or for details about something, and it is more than copying, it is stealing, it is plagiarism.
Well, I don't I've read Ms. Langdon's article, and I thought it was heartfelt and reasonable in most respects. But to me, plagiarism and copying, this is a distinction without a difference. I can't grasp the distinction that she's trying to make. And there really isn't 30,000 words that are at issue here. I mean, if 30,000 words of the novel deal with the life of a nurse in the Second World War, that's not the same as the very small number of words that you can rack up in these parallel columns we were talking about. So, you know, having been dragged out of my burrow to talk about this, I would say that it's understandable what she's saying, but you finally have to restrict the dispute to those words that you can actually run in those parallel columns. It reminds me a little bit of 10 or 15 years ago, there was another incident involving fiction in which the word plagiarism got tossed around without that really being the issue. And it was David Levitt's novel, While England Sleeps, which was based on Stephen Spender's memoir, World Within World.
Hold that thought. I'm going to ask you to elaborate on that when we come back from a short break. We're talking with Thomas Mallon, author of Stolen Words, Forays into the Origins and Ravages of Plagiarism. And you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about plagiarism and the line between inspiration and literary theft. Our guest is Thomas Mallon, author of the book Stolen Words, Forays into the Origins and Ravages of Plagiarism. You're invited to join the discussion. When does literary inspiration become something more dubious? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And Thomas Mallon, before the break, you were referring to another literary scandal of about 15 years ago. Perhaps you could explain that again and make the comparison.
Yes, the American novelist David Levitt had written a novel set in England in the 1930s called While England Sleeps, and it had clear parallels to the poet Stephen Spender's nonfiction memoir of the same period. And there was never an issue of language there. As far as I can recall from the time, nobody ever pointed to particular passages that seemed to have come from one book and found their way into the other. But it was clearly Spender's personal story, the way Lucilla Andrews' personal story went into the McEwen book, that went into David Levitt's novel. And there, I think the issue was fundamentally one of manners. You know, did he have the right to appropriate a living person's life in that way? I think he had every legal right to write his book and every literary right. I don't think he certainly plagiarism was not at issue, but it was a question of a kind of literary and just human etiquette that was involved. I think there's a bit of that with the McEwen case, although, as I say, there are these patches of language that I think he might have given a little more thought to.
I was going to say this question of manners is interesting because Julia Langdon, the journalist who wrote about Ian McEwen, who we just heard from, said she thought it was rude that he had not somehow given greater acknowledgement to the writer. And his defense, though, was that he had acknowledged her and had openly talked about the fact that he had drawn from her work. Is that enough, that kind of acknowledgement that he talked about, for when a writer is borrowing, let's say, or basing something on a person's real life.
Well, I don't think a writer is ever entitled to borrow language without a specific acknowledgement, without an actual identification of the language that's been borrowed. I don't think that that's a good practice, even in fiction. On the other hand, there's no clear formula for acknowledgement in historical fiction. You know, we don't require the way we require it in scholarly writing that bibliographies and footnotes be appended to the works. So I would say the kind of general acknowledgement that he made in terms of taking material, and by that I mean facts and ideas and information, I think probably was adequate. It's where language is concerned that you run into a different set of circumstances.
Let's get a call in here now, and again remind you that the number is 800-989-8255. We're going to Eli, and Eli is in Fort Myers, Florida. Hi, Eli.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I would like to mention that as a amateur writer and author myself, I often find myself just using ideas unconsciously. Every single moment of our lives, we're being pounded by information from all sides, ideas from everywhere, television, movies, books, newspapers. We're bound to let something slip in there unconsciously. And although this might not be the case here, authors need to be given a little more leeway when it comes to the fact that isn't plagiarism just use an idea that's been thought of before, because mostly everything has been thought of before.
What's your take on that, Thomas Mallon?
I think it's a very sensible comment, and I think that writers have to be cut a little slack where that is concerned. I mean, I once said or wrote somewhere that, you know, unless somebody has a kind of osmotic capacity, you know, the capacity to absorb things, he or she would never become a writer at all. I mean, when you're a young writer, you do consciously or unconsciously imitate the styles of writers that you're drawn to and that you admire. I think that, again, I keep harping on this in a kind of schoolmasterish way, but I think it really does come back to the replication of words, you know, put together. I mean, when you see 15 or 20 words that have been strung together, or you see whole sentences or whole paragraphs that have been strung together that are clearly taken from somewhere else, it becomes very difficult to believe that that was simply unconsciousness. You know, there has to be some kind of deliberateness that was there in transferring one to the other. I don't think that's really what's at issue with McEwen, but I think there's a certain kind of sloppiness that's there. But there's an awful lot of hysteria and overstatement surrounding the subject of plagiarism. I mean, I found that 20 years ago when I first wandered into the subject to write a book about it. And people, it seems to me, tend to get off scot-free, or in other cases, they're overpunished. In some instances, particularly in journalism, I think it's proved to be a career killer for people who had committed infractions that were really rather slight. And there's no clear set of sanctions that have ever been developed for dealing with it. And in something like fiction writing, as opposed to scholarship, the situation is murkier than anywhere else.
All right. I'd like to get another writer in this discussion now. Julia Glass is the author of Three Junes, which won the National Book Award, and most recently of The Whole World Over. And she joins us from her home in Marblehead, Massachusetts. So good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Lynn. It's nice to be here.
Now, tell me, have you been following this literary brouhaha, and what's your reaction to it?
Well, I have been following it. You know, it's a bit like rubbernecking. When you're a writer, you just can't stop looking at this kind of a scandal. And I have to say that I only just today read Julia Langdon's two articles, her original article and then her defense, when this phalanx of writers came together to defend McEwen. And, you know, first I have to say that for me, Ian McEwen is in the pantheon. So, you know, I've been listening to what Thomas has been saying about, you know, what we might call sloppiness, and I guess I would have to agree with that. Yet I think that a lot of what's at issue here is not plagiarism. It's not the taking of words. It's the taking of a life experience that was written down by a woman who was a writer after having this very vivid episode in her life as a war nurse. I agree that it's perfectly fine. In fact, it's necessary for fiction writers to appropriate real experiences of other people. The trick here is that McEwen appropriated, to some degree, the life experiences of someone who was also a writer. And to me, if there was a sin, it was perhaps inappropriate, insufficient acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that we are currently going through, in the literary world, what I would have to call a crisis of originality. I think there's a lot of media focus, not just on plagiarism, but on so-called truth. And I think it's pretty funny that this year began with a literary outrage over making something up that only pretended to be true, which was the James Frey episode.
Right.
And here we are. We've got an author who's making something up that actually is true. In other words, it's almost more true than it's supposed to be. And yet, that's what historic fiction is about. So it's very confusing. But I think there's a kind of a zeitgeist here that's blowing, a kind of tsunami of not entirely Schadenfreude, although I think some of that is it. It's driven by that. But just looking over writers' shoulders a little too much.
Let me ask both of you, and Julia first. Does it inhibit you? Do you worry about this in your own writing, and is it inhibiting, do you think, at all, when there is this kind of attention focused on either memoirs, which turn out not to be memoirs and maybe should have been written as fiction in the first place, and fiction that perhaps has borrowed too liberally from a true memoir? Does it inhibit you as a writer then?
I don't feel inhibited. I mean, I agree with Thomas that if you're not a sponge, I loved what you said about osmosing or whatever you said, Thomas, but, I consider myself a sponge and sometimes even kind of a leech. I mean, I say that I'm the nosiest person in the room at any party because I want to hear about everything, and part of the point of hearing about everything is that it goes into my writing about life in my fiction. But I want to say one other thing, and that's that as a result of McEwen's situation here, I've begun to see critics take fiction writers to task for having acknowledgments at all, which seems to be a perverse side effect of this disease we're going through. And I guess it's been partly inspired by, I haven't seen it, but Norman Mailer's latest book apparently has gargantuan acknowledgments and pseudo-bibliographies. And I consider acknowledgments important myself in my fiction, not just because I want to say where I came across some ideas that inspired me, but because I want to share my excitement over some source material with my readers. And I don't think there's any sin in that. And the irony is that, McEwen did acknowledge a certain debt, maybe not enough. Maybe he didn't acknowledge it enough, and maybe he ought to have interviewed her, but why do we have to protect ourselves when we're just doing our job?
All right, let's see if we can get a call in here. We have Keith in Syracuse, New York. Keith.
Hi, yes, I'm listening with a vast amount of interest, especially considering what your latest guest just said. But I'm wondering what both of the individuals have to say about the fact that a majority of Shakespeare's writing, who is usually considered to be the origin of our language, was borrowed without proper citation, and he then used his own language or created his own language to retell that story. And then in regards to the McEwen novel, it comes down to the fact that what he has done was borrowed an experience, as your guest said, and rewrote it in his own words. And I have a problem with the idea of plagiarism being the stealing of life experience. All writers are trying to detail things that happen in life in order to gain some perspective, and if that's our ultimate goal, then how we go about it really isn't the issue, unless we steal actual words from other individuals. So I'm wondering what both the guests have to think of that.
All right, thanks for your call, Keith. Thomas Mallon, what's your response to Keith's
Well, I think that novelists certainly do take the experience, whether it's the experience of figures from the past, the way historical novelists do, or the experience of people around them. I mean, every novelist has put his or her mother into his book in one form or another. And that's another kind of peril, and that's another kind of, it is a kind of appropriation. But without that kind of appropriation, I don't think we would have any fiction. I think Julia made a very interesting point about how the McEwen matter is complicated by the fact that Lucilla Andrews was a writer. She was not somebody who produced just this memoir. She produced this large body of romance fiction. And there, I think, and this may be one of the reasons that the case is a little baffling to Americans, is, as it does in so many aspects of English life, I think class is rearing its ugly head here. And what's the particular form of class is kind of literary class and mm-hmm. rankings. The idea that McEwen, who in some ways at the moment is the ultimate highbrow British novelist, seemed to have an inordinate dependence on this downmarket, you know, romance writer, I think has inflamed people on one side of the equation. On the other hand, I would say that some of the defenses of McEwen by the novelists have been a bit on the pompous side.
Yeah,
we're novelists, we're artists, we have to be able to do whatever we want. Well, that's not true either. There are conventions, there are rules. The problem, particularly where fiction is concerned, is that the conventions are slippery. How much acknowledgement is enough? How much is not enough? They're very difficult things to disentangle.
Thomas Mallon is the author of Stolen Words, Forays into the Origins and Ravages of Plagiarism. We're also joined by Julia Glass, author of Three Junes, and you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm going to try and get one more call in here before the end of this program. Jim in Florida. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Talk about colloquialisms, things in common language, jargon. I mean, are we entering the slippery slope where we can patent the human genome and split it up amongst all kinds of corporations? And are we going to now take language and do the same thing? I think the paradigm needs to be an ethical rather than a legal one. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Julia Glass, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, that's a complex idea, but I will say that one thing that I've been thinking about today is, you know, I had a long life as a visual artist before I turned to writing fiction in my 30s, and one thing that I find very interesting is to compare words, which are very discrete, you know, coin-like objects that all writers, but fiction writers in particular, you know, arrange in unique constellations. But nobody owns those words, and it's very different from the visual art world where brush strokes are quite individual. You know, if I were to paint a vase of sunflowers, that could be homage to Van Gogh. Mm-hmm. It could be my own, but nobody would accuse me of plagiarism. There's forgery in the art world, but there isn't really much plagiarism. And I think the fact that we can't own words leads to some problems in which those who oversee writers become, you know, extremely school marmish about exactly what I can call mine and what I have to say really belongs to someone else, and I borrowed it for my own purposes. But it's tough to feel as if we're being increasingly handicapped by the watchdog zeitgeist of the moment.
Well, let me ask you this last question, Thomas Mallon, because you have referred to this more as sloppiness on the part of Ian McEwen, even though there is some, it looks like he actually borrowed some phrases and wrote some of the mm-hmm. same words, not just research material. So how does a writer guard against that kind of sloppiness so that it doesn't become full-fledged plagiarism?
I think he needs to check his source material. And, you know, when he's going over the book, recall what the sources were for that particular portion of the book, and really to make sure that he hasn't appropriated the language insofar as he can, make sure that he has given it something original, has leavened it with something that is his own and not the sources. I think the last caller makes a very good point about keeping this in the ethical realm and outside the legal realm. Not that the two of them are supposed to be mutually mutually exclusive, but the law is a very blunt instrument for dealing with plagiarism. There are copyright laws, but that's for things like dealing with wholesale piracy. I think these questions have to be adjudicated legally, without the law. Okay. The legal questions are for piracy.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you for being with us. Julia Glass, author of Three Junes and The Whole World Over. It was good to have you.
Thank you.
And Thomas Mallon is a historical novelist, author of the forthcoming book Fellow Travelers. So good to have you as well.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.